This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
When we're up on the Capitol Hill, that's what we hear over and over again, what are you doing in Africa? So it has a very, very strong backing.
That's Ray Washburn, head of the U.S. Overseas Private Investment Corporation, talking about government support for projects in Africa. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. wants to examine the business records of Glencore, a company based in Switzerland that does business with the DRC, Nigeria, as well as Venezuela. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Emil Forsberg scored in the 66th minute, and Sweden held on to defeat Switzerland 1-0 today and advanced to the World Cup quarterfinals. In the last round of 16 match later today, England is facing Colombia. England should be well rested after sitting most of its starters in its last match, a 1-0 loss to Belgium. Both teams already had clinched spots in the knockout round. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned for the sunny side of sports. And now we have in studio Mohamed El Shenawy. Not the famous World Cup Egyptian goalie from the national team, but VOA's own Mohamed El Shenawy, who was in Moscow to sample World Cup fever. And now he is with us to tell us all about the experience. Welcome back, Mr. Shenawy.
Thank you very much.
So, how was it in Moscow, World Cup experience?
Actually, it was quite different than the last time I had the chance to participate or watch World Cup. That was in 1990 in Italy when I was a reporter for The Voice of America. But this time I was on the other side with the crowd. And that's a totally different experience, having roaring cheers in the stadiums. Having songs belonging to each country, and I was, of course, following the Egyptian team. So the Egyptians picked a very nice song that anybody can dance to, and the name of the song was Good Omen. However, it was Bad Omen for the Egyptian team, who lost the three games he played. And there were a lot of Egyptians I never saw in an international game, 15 to 20,000 spectators following the Egyptian team everywhere, from Ekaterian to Saint Petersburg to Volgograd.
Was there a lot of expectation on Mohamed Salah?
Yes, but he unfortunately was injured in the final of the European Championship, and Ramos hit him very hardly and he injured his shoulders. So he came unfit to play, and the real problem with all the Arab and African teams was relying on one or two players and not playing as a team, and that caused the disastrous results. We saw that in 15 games played by five Arab and African countries in the continent, just won three games out of 15. So if that tells you anything, it tells you that the football in Africa is stand still, if not going backward. Actually, that caused the fans to make a new abbreviation for FIFA, F-I-F-A. Football is not for Arabs or Africans.
Wow. Lots of upsets. Messi on the weekend, Ronaldo. all gone. And any how do you see things moving forward?
Actually, it might be good to see new soccer or football power coming into existence. And I would think that France showed a role example of having good players, and they play as a team. So I think that maybe Belgium, Brazil, France would be in the final round competing against each other.
Mohamed El-Shenawy, right back from Moscow. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The United States today introduced a new investment program for Africa, offering an additional $1 billion for project financing. The new Connect Africa initiative is part of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation under the U.S. State Department. Ray Washburn is the head of OPIC. He spoke to journalists today ahead of his trip to Kenya, Rwanda, South Africa, Uganda, and Zimbabwe, which begins next week.
Connect Africa will focus investment in three key sectors. First, we will invest in transportation infrastructure. This includes roads, ports, and airports that will support cross-border trade. Second, we will also invest in technology, internet and wireless networks, and all the technologies that improve the way people work and access healthcare and do business. Finally, Connect Africa will invest in value chains. These are the processes that connect the people who produce raw materials, like farmers, to the end user.
Washburn says the U.S. remains committed to building relationships with Africa, including business ties.
This is such a part of our national security, is for the United States national security is to have a strong Africa. And the new Build Act that is going through Congress right now, which will take OPIC and basically double our size, Senator Coons, who is one of the major sponsors, has a deep affinity for Africa. He spent time there as a missionary as a young man. And so when we're up on the Capitol Hill, that's what we hear over and over again, what are you doing in Africa? So it has a very, very strong backing in the U.S. government, and that's why we're over there.
OPIC invests all over the continent, Washburn says, and investment decisions are based on the type of project. And he urged businesses, both in the United States and in Africa, to reach out to the agency.
We have the capital. We have the Trump administration's commitment to, and Capitol Hill's commitment to Africa to go forward. But we need people to bring us projects and countries to identify areas that they would like financing in.
That was Ray Washburn, the head of the U.S. Overseas Private Investment Corporation. Shares in global mining and energy trader Glencore dropped more than 10% on world stock markets today after the U.S. Department of Justice ordered it to hand over documents. The company said the U.S. wants to examine its business records for the Democratic Republic of Congo and Nigeria, as well as Venezuela. Glencore, which is based in Switzerland, said the U.S. subpoena concerned documents showing compliance with corruption and money laundering laws. The requested records date from 2007 to the present. Glencore trades in copper and cobalt mined in the DRC, and it produces oil in Nigeria and Venezuela. International companies that have subsidiaries in the United States or do considerable banking there can be subject to U.S. laws on corruption and money laundering. Businesses around the world see opportunities for growth in Africa, but getting connected to the right partners and investors on the continent can be tricky. So recently, thousands of investors, traders, entrepreneurs, business leaders, and key economic players gathered at the 2018 Africa Trade and Investment Global Summit in Washington. One U.S. company, Go Africa, wants to begin making its products in Africa. My colleague Kim Lewis attended the event and spoke with the company's executives. Denny Beach is president and CEO of Go Africa.
The whole value proposition of Core Africana product was that Africa, the African countries, are not getting the value add of their own commodities. For example, cacao is not processed. Cote d'Ivoire grows the most cacao in the world, but it doesn't process. So it ships its product to other, I won't name the companies, but that means they don't get the value add. Most Americans don't know that the chocolate they're eating is from Africa. So the Africans, it's being more or less marginalized. And it doesn't process, so it doesn't get the shells, it doesn't get the oil, it doesn't get the whole value add of the product.
CEO Beach said they presently have partnerships in Ivory Coast and Nigeria. They also hope to find a partner in Ghana. Samuel Jones is the vice president of Go Africa.
Actually, we're getting great responses. We came yesterday and we actually handed out products. We actually brought bags of our coffee and our cashews here to show people our finished product that's available nationwide on Amazon, any membership, Prime or otherwise. So we're actually getting a good response and people are very interested in our product. And we're actually building connections for getting our product marketed in Africa as well, because we like to be on the shelves in Africa as well.
Currently, the company purchases raw material from Africa but makes its product in the U.S. state of Maryland. CEO Beach says they want to change this strategy.
The whole value proposition of Core Africana product was that Africa, the African countries, are not getting the value add of their own commodities. For example, cacao is not processed. Cote d'Ivoire grows the most cacao in the world, but it doesn't process. So it ships its product to other, I won't name the companies, but that means they don't get the value add. Most Americans don't know that the chocolate they're eating is from Africa. So the Africans, it's being more or less marginalized. And it doesn't process, so it doesn't get the shells, it doesn't get the oil, it doesn't get the whole value add of the product.
CEO Beach said processing commodities in Africa allows growers to reach new markets, such as the Asian market, which needs different types of cash products.
It's generally not known that most cashews are not the part that you eat. It's mainly flour and things, because Asian and Chinese cultures use cashews as a thickening agent in most of the product. So it's used in other forms. Also, we would want to process locally because, for example, chocolate here is eaten in bars and other things. In Africa, it's generally used as a spread or paste or in pastries and other items. That's the different way of consuming chocolate that we want to kind of help Africa do that by processing locally.
Vice President Samuel Jones says an event such as this summit allows people from around the world to make deals happen right away.
These types of events are wonderful because you're meeting like-minded people. You're meeting people from everywhere. There are people from all parts of the Middle East, Africa, and actually people from India, all who have businesses in Africa and are working with farmers in Africa, working commodities. You're also meeting financial people who are talking to us about like funding our projects.
That was Samuel Jones and Dennis Beach with Go Africa. They spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis at the Africa Trade Investment Global Summit in Washington. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The United States today introduced a new investment program for Africa, offering an additional $1 billion for project financing. And the U.S. wants to examine the business records of Glencore, a company based in Switzerland that does business in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, as well as Venezuela. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The man accused of a mass stabbing attack at a three-year-old girl's birthday party has been charged with first-degree murder after the young Ethiopian immigrant died of her wounds. She has been identified as Rua Kadir. The International Rescue Committee, which is providing support for the victims and their families, says Rua and her mother arrived in the U.S. in December 2015 after fleeing conflict in Ethiopia. Five other children, ranging in age from 4 to 12, and three adults also were injured in the rampage Saturday night. The victims were all immigrants and had gathered at the party at the low-income housing complex in Boise, Idaho, where they live. Seven victims remain hospitalized. Police say 30-year-old Timmy Kinner, who has a long criminal record, carried out the attack in revenge after he was told to leave by a woman who had let him stay in her apartment. A UN investigation finds all armed groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Kasai regions are guilty of mass atrocities, yet very few perpetrators are brought to justice. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where a team of international experts on the Kasai regions has submitted its findings to the UN Human Rights Council.
More than 500 victims and other sources were interviewed by the team of experts during its eight-month investigation into violence in the Kasai regions. Team leader Bakre Wali Indai says he and his colleagues are shocked by the catastrophic human rights situation. He says since violence erupted in Kasai in August 2016, the Democratic Republic of Congo security forces, the anti-government militia Kamuna Nsapu, and the government-allied militia Banamura have all committed many atrocities. He speaks through an interpreter.
These atrocities include murders, mutilations, rapes, and other forms of sexual violence. It is our view that some of the acts of aggression committed by the FARDC and these other groups constitute crimes against humanity and war crimes.
In Dyses, the team was struck by the magnitude and brutality of the crimes committed by all those involved in the Kasai crisis. He says everyone has been affected, but children have been especially hard hit, both as victims and perpetrators of the crimes. He speaks through an interpreter.
The Kamuna Nsapu militia massively recruited children. Children were often forced to join them. They were often very young, and they were used on the front line. Often they went into battle actually unarmed or armed only with sticks. The DRC's armed forces were equipped with automatic weaponry, and they shot without warning and often used disproportionate force.
The investigators say impunity is a serious problem, and those guilty of crimes are rarely prosecuted. The DRC's Minister of Human Rights, Marie-Ange Mushobekwa, disagrees. She says three-quarters of police officers and soldiers guilty of crimes have been arrested. She says her government does not reject the investigators' report out of hand, but says the work of the team was done hastily, and that makes some of its findings doubtful. While agreeing that some security force members may be guilty of crimes, she says most have been committed by those connected to the Kamuna Nsapu, whom she calls a terrorist group. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Baka pygmies in eastern Cameroon are protesting the destruction of their forest by European and Chinese logging companies. The pygmies say the logging companies reap huge profits and leave little in return. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from a refugee settlement in Lomi, eastern Cameroon.
Forty-five-year-old Paul Ongwana talks through a bullhorn as he moves from one Baka pygmy settlement to the next in Magu village, 45 kilometers from Cameroon's eastern town of Lomi. He is urging locals to join him in trying to keep logging company trucks out of their village. Ongwana says residents are angry because the forest, which makes up their history, culture and livelihood, is being destroyed.
No demand, no demand, the two.
He says their village has grown from barely 25 pygmy families to more than 200 within 1 year. But it still lacks schools, hospitals, and recreational facilities that logging companies promised to construct 20 years ago when they first started exploiting the forest. He says many Chinese come to their villages just to exploit them. Hundreds respond to Ongwana's call and dance in protest on the only road in their neighborhood. Villagers say logging companies constructed the road 2 decades ago to transport wood out of the forest. The only school in the village sits by the road. Village Chief Rodrick Alama says they will block the road until their message gets through to the government of Cameroon. He says logging companies take advantage of the population's innocence. They refuse to give them information about the quantity of wood and forest resources the government authorizes them to exploit. He says trees as old as 100 years are harvested within seconds and none are planted, while the animals and natural resources the people live on are being destroyed. Baka pygmies are an ethnic group spread through rainforests in Cameroon, Congo, Gabon, and Central African Republic. They are very short people, with most adults standing less than 1.5 meters tall. The destruction of the forest resources, which pygmies depend on, is breeding poverty and ill health, say villagers. They have lived off the forest's wild animals and fruits for thousands of years and use its natural herbs as medicine. Logging companies contacted by VOA declined requests for interview. But one company, China Wood, said it paid up to 20% of its income from logging as a royalty after paying taxes. Cameroon's Ministry of Forestry and Wildlife gives permission for companies to cut trees in the forest under the stipulation that at least 10% of the income goes to local communities. Local government divisional officer Isidore Chofo says not all of the money is spent on the Baka pygmy community, but authorities stand ready to support them.
L'État est au courant de ce manque d'infrastructure, mais en attendant que des solutions soient apportées.
But he says the Baka pygmies should show that they will make good use of the infrastructure by sending their children to the only school they have and farming on the vast fertile lands around them. He says when Baka pygmies start doing that, the state will provide more schools, hospitals, and the social services they are requesting. There are an estimated 75,000 Baka pygmies living in the rich forests of eastern Cameroon. Rights groups say indigenous forest peoples, like the Baka, are among the most exploited in the region. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Lomi, Eastern Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 1630 and 1830 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.